we'll talk about it with the man right now from the Deseret News, Brandon Gurney, the Grenade. Drop a bomb on us. Drop a grenade on us right now. What have you thought about the tight end situation from 2010 to present day? And do you think that things will be changing this year in the tight end spot?
Yeah, you know, I was kind of joking around this with the other media guys, but we've been basically covering the same story about the tight ends for the last five years.
Since 2010.
They might be using the tight end more this year. No, they're not. And this year, I'm not going to be buying on that at all, because there's not really any. I shouldn't say legitimate talent. It's just younger talent. It's not guys that, man, he really deserves a spot, like a Devin Mahina. I mean, there's guys like Colby Jorgensen, who I like a lot. I like his ability. You got Brian Sampson. But when you look at Robert and I, what his offense is, what he's going to be doing, he's going to be doing the hurry-up thing. And it's, I'm not going to buy it this year. I think you're going to see a tight end less than any – a factor probably less than any year since the Knights come back and been coordinator. It's just the way it is, and I don't buy it. I don't unless there's a structural change to the offense. I'm not buying it. And another argument against that is the Knights going to be very cognizant to put his best 11 guys on the field, and in the hurry up offense, you don't have time to mix and match and really counteract what you see the defense doing. It's just go. So he's going to be putting his 11 best guys out there, and I just don't see a true tight end that's lining up in a tight formation as part of that 11 best players. I think you're going to see wide formations. I think you're going to see a slot. I think you'll see a lot of Terren Haugh, but I don't think he's going to be lining up in tight formations. I think he's going to be just in the YR slot and go from there. So no, I'm not going to buy any tight end talk. It's a story I'm not going to revisit this year. I'm done with it. So
no, Brent, I think you make a good point. This is Spencer here. I always thought, and BYU fans are used to seeing those tight ends catch a lot of passes and stuff, but it's the system isn't in place now. When you're spreading these tight ends out and defenses are reading that, you know, one, who are they putting on them? They're putting their defensive backs, their nickel packages. They're getting guys that can cover a little bit better than the traditional kind of West Coast offense where you run and play action. You're getting these guys on linebackers and getting out. So I always thought that it was more of a system thing than anything else, than really trying to get people involved in the offense from the tight end position.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I'm just, I mean, there's the only way I could see it, if there was a really, really talented, proven tight end in the system, and there's just not that guy this year. And even the guys, the only true tight end would be probably a Brian Sampson is a true tight end. I don't think Colby Jorgensen is a true tight end. I think he's a guy that could be very good and split out in the wide position. He's kind of a skinny, really tall, athletic guy.
Hasn't Colby been moved to outside linebacker? I think he's moved outside.
Right. That's right. You're absolutely right.
It was towards the end of spring.
He could move back, though. You never know. It's one of those things. But, yeah, so that even strengthens my argument. there you go. I mean, he's already showing his hand, isn't he? His hand's not going to be part of my offense. So yeah. And he likes that little slot receiver, too. So, anyway.
That being said, I think this is a good debate. Do you think that Terren Haugh or Mitchell Juergens is going to have a breakout year? I thought both of them were targeted a decent amount. Will they split those reps, or do you think one will just be a little bit better than the other one, or will one be targeted more than the other?
I'd go with Mitchell Juergens personally. I think he's the shifty guy that could really help out in this offense. But then again, with Taysom Hill probably scrambling as much as he is, I've always said that he could do well to channel a little bit of a Riley Nelson and just learn to lob it up to guys. And he's got some big bodies. When the timing's off and you're just basically creating your own play, that's where Riley Nelson made his living, just lobbing it up to Cody Hoffman, just knowing that he could break up a pattern and just go get it. So in that aspect, I think Terren Haugh could maybe be that guy. But anyway, I think both of those guys are pretty much are what they are. I don't see them being significantly more than what we've seen, as other than just solid players. I think both of them are very good players in the system. But as far as a breakout year, I'd look more to Nick Kurtz or Mitch Matthews, who we've pubbed a lot and for good reason. I think he could even make a significant leap from where he was last year. Those would be the guys I'd look at. Maybe even a Trey Dye in the slot receiver. I think he's a guy with a lot of upside that could do some good things. So.
Brandon Gurney, the Grenade, as I call him, from the Deseret News, on with us here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. We debated this in the How We See It segment. Spencer played on that 2004 team that was just loaded with NFL talent. Granted, some of it was young talent, but you did have some pretty dang good football players. On the offense, you know, John Beck, Austin Collie, Watkins, Fahu Tahi, you had Eddie Keel, Caressa, Ofa Moiatu, Scott Young. That's a good offensive line. On the defense, Brady Papinga, Cam Jensen, Aaron Francisco, Manaya Brown, John Denny, Sean Nua. You know, but they still went 5-7. How does that happen with so much NFL talent? And you know, with the draft recently being finished, you had some of the mini camps that occurred, and I just keep on hearing BYU fans saying, "Oh well, we just can't put any talent into the NFL." Yet you look at this team, and they had all the talent in the world, and go 5-7.
Yeah, that was the first year I actually covered the team when BYU was stupid enough to let me have credentials back with CBS. But that team
big
always,
mistake.
Big mistakes. Huge mistakes. But what I remember about that year, there were a ton of defensive injuries. They were just almost knocked down to the two deep. Just the second string guys pretty much midway through the season. You remember that TCU game where it was just or maybe I'm thinking of 2005. I think that was 2005.
Yeah, you're thinking of 2005, the next year, Broncos' first year.
I'm thinking of 2005, but 2004, yeah. I just remember the players being done with Croton is kind of the impression I got. That just toward the end of the year where they just weren't playing. And I think there was just kind of a dearth of leadership, just in that they did not want to follow their head coach. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was really a bad feeling on the team where they just didn't really believe in the system anymore. If I'm remembering right, that was so long ago, but that offense was exciting. I remember seeing Todd Watkins practice, just thinking, man, this is just something special. This is something really unique. And Boston Collie, yeah, it was a really frustrating thing that team wasn't able to do more. And it did, but that just shows that talent's not everything with these teams.
Yeah, there was a lot of big plays, if you remember. I mean, and that's what people talk about now is the lack of kind of those long throws and big plays. But, yeah. I mean, you saw so many with Collie and Watkins just beating guys and Beck lobbing it up there. And, yeah, I don't know. It's hard. I mean, the leadership thing, it's hard for me to say because I was kind of in it, and I'm not thinking, you know, I didn't quit on, you know,
really
I'm thinking we didn't
leadership.
Quit on it. No, I mean, I didn't say that at the time, but I think part of it, 2003, I mean, you kind of have a bad season before, and it almost fosters this kind of culture, like inside, if a play needs to be made at the end of the day, that maybe there's some doubt there. You haven't been making those plays. You've been on the losing end of some tight games, and you kind of need to break through that mentality to start winning, right?
Well, when I say the dearth of leadership, I just say coaching. I just think there was some players were done with Cronin is kind of the impression I got. And I was still kind of new back then. I wasn't able to really compare it to other teams I covered. I just saw Cronin on his last day. So it's kind of hard to gauge. But what was interesting to me is it was very apparent that to me in the preceding years, the players really bought into Bronco in that system. And I didn't really feel that in 2004. And you just hear the comments. I remember players just saying, being very thankful that BYU made that move and moved on. But, yeah, that was a tough year. That was a very tough year because the team was so talented and it just didn't work out. But it happens.
So Spencer White let me in on some news in the Cougar Insider Report. I think this is news because we're always talking about accountability. Bronco Mendenhall talking about accountability, right? Giving credit where credit's due also. He mentioned that the guy that led the charge to get Bronco Mendenhall the job was Cameron Jensen. So I'm saying right now, Bronco Mendenhall deserves a little finder's fee. He's get a little finder's fee to Cam Jensen. All I'm saying is I'm just saying.
Yeah. I remember it well. He went in and just said, you need to hire this guy. There was a lot of players that really vouched for Bronco. And it just kind of shows you how important it is that he's involved, that these players, that there's just something about an intangible that you can't really put a finger on. I referenced this before, but I remember interviewing Brian Keel. You remember the year Jaime Hill took over the defense in 2008. It was an absolute disaster. And Bronco, Jaime Hill ended up getting fired, and he took over the defense midseason. And the improvement was just almost instant, and it was really spectacular. I think I'm getting the year wrong now I'm thinking about it, but I remember asking Brian Keel about it, and I'm like, what is it about Bronco? What does he do? He says, I don't know. He says, just him standing there and just him being there, and he said he knew the second that Bronco took over that these players would start playing better, and they just believe in it. And it's really extraordinary to me that it's not able to be put in words and maybe a tangible thing that he does, but just maybe an intangible, just him being there and just his presence. I think it really speaks loudly to where Bronco needs to be. And I think it really indicates that this defense will be better just by virtue of him being involved as he was before. And it's something that I hope. I don't think Bronco's ever going to let go of again, because every time he tries it, it just does not work out. It doesn't. It doesn't matter if you find a guy that calls the same plays you do, institutes the same workouts, practice regimen, whatever. There's just something that he has that he's able to just bring out the best of these players.
It's that crazy look in his eye, Brandon. You've seen it.
Maybe.
Look in his eye.
I'm talking about this. You guys could probably speak much better than I can.
No, he does. Yeah. I think you're spot on. He just has a presence about him. Guys are willing to kind of run through brick walls for him. And, you know, it's something that either have or you don't have. I mean, I don't think it's something that everyone can see or do, but yeah, no, that's a good point. I feel the same way.
I think it's extraordinary. And so anyway,
any recruiting news on football or basketball you can update us on, Brandon?
The basketball's kind of focused right now, but the football's going to get really interesting, because there's probably not as many like five-star guys as there was last year. Yeah, you don't have your Porter Gustin or your Osa Messina, but there's a lot of quality 3- and 4-star athletes this year. It's going to be just as big as it was last year, just as far as national attention in state. And BYU's really focused in state. Like, I haven't seen them before. Last year, they offered far too many guys far too late. This year, they're really making up for it. They've extended a lot of in-state offers. And two guys I would just point out, three guys, and they all play for Brighton. I think these are the guys that BYU needs to get, would be Drew Jensen, an athlete who I absolutely love, who got injured early last year. But he is phenomenal. He's a guy that could play in multiple positions at the next level. And then you have Simi Fehoko, who's probably going to be end up being the best receiver maybe the state's ever produced by the time he's done. He's got offers from everybody. He likes BYU. BYU's got a very good chance at him. And then Sione Heimuli-Lund, a guy who's just going to blow up recruiting-wise. He's going to have a lot of offers. And I believe he's only a junior this year, so he's not a 2016 guy. But those would be three guys where you would start at. And there's so many others. But BYU needs to get back in state. They need to get that foothold where they're getting the state's top athletes, because the state's churning out some really good athletes this year. And I think you're going to see a bigger focus in state. I think it's going to help BYU in the long run.
Yeah, how do you think Justin Anderson is adapting to his new job as a recruiting coordinator?
Too early to tell. I think he's still trying to formulate just maybe his game plan and how he goes about things. But I think he's going to focus in state more, and we talked about it before. I think it helps in some aspects where Martson maybe lack. I thought Martson did not look in state as much as he should have. He didn't look at the traditional BYU way of recruiting, which BYU does have a lot of strengths that you need to exemplify through the recruiting process. He did really well at forging new frontiers, just as far as just going down south to Texas or in Alabama. But you need to just really, you can't ignore your roots, and you got to focus in state. And I really liked the Bronco during the last letter of intent day, a press conference, admitted it. He says, yeah, we need to focus in state more. We need to offer these guys more. That's one thing we learned. And you're seeing that. And BYU needs to win the state. And it's getting increasingly difficult to do where you lost 4 years in a row to Utah. That hurts. That hurts. And now that you're not able to play them, it's really hard to make that up. So you got to do whatever is possible to get in this top talent. And the best way to do it is to make these guys know that you're on them early, that you believe in them, and that you're the school that believed in them first. That plays really big in a recruit's mind. If I've learned nothing about recruiting, it's that. That first matters. BYU's gotten a lot of guys they had no business in getting by being in there first. I'm thinking of guys like Warner and then Nick Kurtz. Guys, I don't think BYU would have a chance at if they were late to the party, but because they got in there first and established that trust, they were able to get these guys, and they need to do that with in-state guys, and I believe that they're doing that to a larger degree. So, and I think it's going to pay dividends, and you got to win. You obviously have to win, and so we'll see it. We'll see what happens. With the moves BYU's making, if BYU's able to put out a winning product on the field, I think you're going to see a very good recruiting class, and a lot of the state's top athletes come to BYU. We'll see how that plays out.
We had Riley Jensen on yesterday from Mountain West Elite, former BYU and Utah State quarterback as well. He stated that in the 2017 class, he expects over 50 Division I scholarships. Would you agree with that?
Wow, that's 50. That's a lot. I love Riley. Riley does a great job, and I hate to argue against him. I'd love to see it. Yeah, 50. Let's go.
Because how many were there last year, Brandon? Do you know how many there were last year?
There was 30-something last year, if I recall. It was either high 20s or there was an extraordinary amount last year. And I have to, man, that's an interesting question. I'll have to go back and look at that. But there were a lot. There's definitely over 20. I know that. So, but I'm going to go count that up as soon as I get off the phone with you. So.
Oh, it's all good. Yeah, sometimes I put you on the spot here, Grenade, because I just think you're all knowing.
I'm not.
You are the Zen master there at the Deseret News. Brandon Gurney, the Grenade, on with us here. Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. Did you go down and pick up your Marriott Center yellow mustard puke chairs? By chance?
I'm so glad they're rid of those things. Oh, dude, those things were ridiculous.
Let me tell you what happened yesterday. I had a firsthand report given to me this morning. It was a cluster cuss. Mormons galore, just swarming, asking, is it free? Is it free? Is it free? Is it free? Is it really free? So someone leaked this out, right? People were just trying to find it. Initially, these were only supposed to be given to Cougar Club members. There was fans galore, and there's none left. They were all picked up. People were pulling up in two doors, like a little old lady, 70 years old. Is it free? And she's got a two-door, you know, Civic. Go ahead and throw it in the back. Excuse me, ma'am. These won't fit in the back. I mean, because they were a plank of four chairs, right? You saw that, right? A plank of four chairs. I mean, they don't fold up. It's crazy, man. People wanted their free chairs.
So they're gone, huh?
They're gone, all gone.
I wanted to put them in my theater room in my basement, you know?
Just
comfortable, puke yellow chair. Sick.
But everyone got some, man, apparently. Everyone took them all, man. Within like 4 hours, they were all gone.
Yeah,
can you believe it?
It's something about the BYU fan base, for sure.
No, that's great memorabilia. You know what I mean? I don't know where I would have put them. And I apologize, Zach. I was going to try to get some today, but they're all gone. You know? Sorry, I wasn't there.
It was a lack of execution on our part.
Yeah, definitely a lack of execution. But, I mean, the pickup times were between 4 and 6. I mean, that's during our show. How in the heck am I supposed to go down there, Zachary? I guess I could have sent you down. Yeah, that's what Zach's
for. You got to be in two places at once, man. You got to step up your game, man.
Gurney, What are you looking forward to this offseason? What are you working on right now?
It's all baseball right now. It's just the thick of the 4A and 5A playoffs. There's some interesting guys if you want to go out to games. Pleasant Grove's got a really good team this year, and they got a guy that signed with BYU, an Easton Walker. He's kind of an infielder slash pitcher. He'll probably play the infield at BYU. Very good player. He was our 5A MVP last year, I believe. And they have another really good player, Peyton Henry, who plays the closer role for them, and he's their cleanup hitter. Really, really good prospect. I believe he's a junior, and I believe BYU's got a good chance to sign him as well. State of Utah's not really a baseball state, but there is some interesting prospects to look at, and Pleasant Grove's got a really good team, and they're probably the team to beat, but Lone Peak's pretty good as well, and Cottonwood, and it should be fun. It should be fun to see how these games turn out.
Gurney, thanks for joining us. Appreciate all your time and effort. I can't wait to do it again soon, brother.